Now, for something completely different, here is your host, Brian Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all sexes, and especially all of our Ivy League tent dwellers listening in, only 195 campus rioting days before the big election that will solve all your problems. Welcome to the new normal episode of our little get-together here. It is the two and only, of course. After today's podcast, the Columbia Universally Recognized Chorale will perform the mosh pit limbo arrangement of the Bob Dylan classic Blowing in the Wind, featuring a Kamala Harris solo on the Ruptured Duck Call. Co-starring this week in a high-fiber presentation, back from another rejection by the Radio Hall of Fame nominating committee, former co-captain of the LSU anti-Vietnam War protests and panty raids, your clearly famous Brian Wilson, and just before leaving to test the employment practices of the local Sheets gas station and taco stand, author of the hard, soft, and paint-by-numbers editions of his current bestseller, Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty, sporting a new Gabby Hayes bobblehead on the handlebars of his new skateboard, the New York Post's in hoc opinion page arsonist, James Bovard. Welcome, James.
Brian, thanks for that lead-in. It's always on my Gabby Hayes skateboard. You know, I can't claim not to know who Gabby Hayes was after you mentioned it last week. I looked online and I said, well, I think my hat is a little less banged up than his, but you
that's true.
Maybe it's a coin toss. Maybe it's a coin toss. But
I'd like to see you in that hat, though. That forgot all about the Gabby Hayes hat, cowboy hat on sideways in a high wind. If for those of you who haven't seen it,
yeah, and there's a hat I got in the a mountain outside of Gatlinburg. It was from a company called Outback Hats, and I had not realized the name of the hat, and I saw on the back later that the design of the hat was called the bootlegger hat, and which is well and good, but a friend of mine keeps getting confused, and she says, "You're wearing your bootlicker hat."
Yeah, I knew that was
and coming. I'm thinking, come on, you know, it's, hey, check the label. It doesn't say bootlicker, you know? A man's got to have some dignity.
Yeah, especially someone in your position. I totally agree. Well, you know what? When we convert over to video podcasting, I think that would be a great bit, because every podcast you'd have a different hat, and I'll scrounge up some of mine, and I don't know. We'll have some fun with that. I see from reading your latest column, which if you don't get the New York Post, you can see up at jimbovard.com. It doesn't look to me as if President Biden's going to be making any surprise ice cream stops at any of the Sheet stations.
Well, I think his Sheet's popularity might have peaked last Wednesday when he wandered into a Pittsburgh Sheet's and looked somewhat boggle-minded. And then the next day, Biden's Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed a lawsuit against Sheets for using criminal background checks to hire the 23,000 people at its 600 convenience stores across six states.
Do you get a connection there? I mean, it was the fact that he didn't get a standing ovation and they weren't six deep at the Pepsi counter to welcome him and throw roses at his feet. I mean, I guess he could have made a phone call from the limo, but I suspect that the EEOC's dastardly deeds were planned well in advance of that.
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I'd say the odds were pretty heavy that it was a coincidence. But, I mean, it doesn't look good. And there have been one or two people who raised doubts about this on Twitter.
I saw that one bit of fan mail you got.
It's funny. There were some folks that thought that our back and forth last a week or two ago on the definition of journalist was testy. But you read something like that, my goodness, I was hurt deeply. What can I say? I'm trying to pull that damn thing up here.
I can get it in a second. This is from X, formerly Twitter. I don't know how much longer I have to keep saying that. Really, I just say the hell with it, X. It looks like the post was by some guy named J.D. Luckenbach, who has a town in Texas named after him. Jim Bovard is hardcore paranoid libertarian who doesn't believe government should have any role in tracking domestic terrorists since it's a violation of civil rights. He cites Jim Jordan's committee as his source, but we all know Jordan's credibility is shit. What a diplomatic comment. I mean, you have to.
I've been traumatized ever since I saw that earlier today.
Yeah,
I just don't know it. I mean, there's all kinds of quibbles on this. A lot of libertarians would say, me, hardcore, the dude's a damn moderate, you know? He's just probably wears a necktie at least three times a year.
Probably.
And the thought of me being paranoid, I mean, it's a question of what baseline that you use. If I'm compared to the folks that I was raised on the side of a mountain in Appalachia, I am as reasonable as can be.
Well, people have a lot of trouble with libertarians just in general. I mean, if it isn't standing up for your civil rights, your human rights, your natural rights, your Bill of Rights, they really take umbrage at that. I don't know whether it's a defensive mode because they don't, and they realize they just got caught with their idealistic pants down, or they just don't see the world through the same prism and have a more idealistic look at government, and that government's here to help and do good things.
Idealistic is one term here. I mean, I think most of the people that have that, you know, it's interesting. In the last 15 years, there is vastly more visceral hostility towards libertarians than there was at the end of the Clinton administration back in 2000. I see it in media pieces. I see it online, and I'm kind of puzzled by it because, you know, I don't think libertarians had enough influence that they could be blamed for any government policies these days.
Not hardly.
But they're still getting scapegoated, and it's kind of like, gee, I wonder how people would react if the libertarians actually had a big impact. They did have some impact, maybe a major impact in the during the Biden administration, because in the Georgia Senate races in November 2020, both of those races, the Republican came in first place, but because they didn't have a majority, a 50%, the rules in Georgia election, they had to do a runoff. And in both cases, the Democrats won that, in part because one of the Democratic candidates promised voters $2,000 if they voted for him. But that wasn't campaign tampering, and it was forgotten. But so that was the biggest impact libertarians have had in the Biden era, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting you say you've seen the pushback, you know, more so than before. I was kind of getting, maybe I'm just reading the wrong things, but I was getting the impression that at least the basic libertarian concept that I think I first heard from P.J. O'Rourke was that there are only two rules. You can't hit people and you can't take their stuff. Everything else is negotiable. I could live by that. It pretty much encompasses everything. I don't know what the big problem is beyond that, but maybe it's just too simple for people like Mr. Luckenbach here to comprehend with any degree of sincerity.
There's a darker spin here, and that is part of the reason there's so much hostility towards libertarians nowadays is because a lot fewer people treasure their individual liberty. There's far more enthusiasm for politicians using their iron fist to enforce social justice or reparations or equality. And because you have that tidal wave of support for one government dictator after another, people are going to be hostile to anybody who says, government should mind its own business and leave people in peace. Because that's not how you make social justice. You have to get everybody under the government boot before there's any hope for fairness.
Well, that's true. I always thought that social justice was just another name for a new set of brass knuckles. It doesn't really...
That's a good phrase.
You can't really mix them up at all. I mean, anything that requires the kind of effort that something like those old teaching standards, was the Common Core and DEI and all the rest of these are all just part of the same knuckle, the same brass, the same boot, the same gun, the same club, whatever active force that's going to be that jackboot in your face from Orwell that's going to be put upon you as you go along.
His line was the future is a jackboot in your face forever.
Yeah.
Of course, he said it better, but, you know, that was the Appalachian version.
Right. Well, there's been some pretty good artistic renderings of that too. But I really I was really kind of taken at the EEOC's position that you wrote about, that that because Sheetz had a policy, an employment policy, that they would not hire criminals, ex-cons, whatever, felons, that they were somehow abusing somebody's rights. And I thought, well, gee, if I what if I owned, I know this is far-fetched, what if I owned a preschool nursery and I refused to hire a pedophile or anyone who had worked for the TSA or a government intelligence agency or something? I mean, would they come? Would I get a visit?
That was actually a specific example used when Texas Attorney General Paxton filed a lawsuit when the EEOC first came out with these new concocted rules, their enforcement guidance, which EEOC pretends have the force of law, but there's no such law. So the Texas Attorney General fought them in federal court. And one of the things that Texas pointed out was that under the EEOC's rules, if somebody was running a nursery, that the nursery could not automatically disqualify a job applicant who had been convicted of indecent exposure.
Well, I wish I had read that. I would have used his quote. It was better than mine. But I think that's the I don't totally understand how that. Well, I didn't understand when I first read it. But then in your article, when you pointed out, and I was totally unaware of this until I read it, that somehow during the 3.5 years of the Biden administration, he and his people had eliminated convicts and felons, that they don't even exist anymore. And that was pretty wild. So I guess Sheetz doesn't really have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, the Biden administration, according to those wizards, there are no ex-convicts or felons. There are only justice-involved individuals. Justice-involved individuals. It's kind of a wordy version of criminal record, but what the heck? It makes the liberals happy.
Is that like there are no more midgets? They're only height challenged adults.
I guess. I
Right.
mean, but. It's interesting. This is a notion that was floated in the last year of the Obama administration by the Obama Justice Department. And I think folks laughed at it then, but I'm not sure if it's not become canonized since then. This was definitely not the idea during the Trump administration.
Well, I tell you, if you want to have some fun with this, you can grab your copy of Last Rites and turn in your text to page 127, beginning with 10,000 czars, and you get a really, really good example rather than just one column in the newspaper. I mean, you get a whole chapter of how the government has been and is dedicated to messing with your job and so on. But I was thinking about that early on in the article. You pointed out that there is no federal statute that the EEOC is basing their heavy-handed interference on. So if there's no law, if I'm not breaking any law, if I'm Mr. Sheets, why don't I just tell the EEOC to go pound Twinkies?
Law is whatever a federal judge says it is, or a federal jury in some cases. And this is a great example of how federal agencies concoct law on their own and trample the Constitution, trample due process. But so part of what fascinated me about this case is these are cases I wrote about some years ago, and I talk a lot with some of the defense attorneys representing the companies involved. And the EEOC is in this case is calling for Sheets to provide back pay and and all kinds of other benefits to people who were not hired because they failed the criminal background check. And so I was going through my records on this, and in previous cases like this where the EEOC sued corporations who had not hired convicted criminals, the EEOC sought to compel companies to give back pay to people who were not hired because they lied about their criminal records.
Yeah, mama.
Other cases, the EEOC insisted that they pay compensation to job applicants who were turned down with violent records. My favorite example was there was one of the people the EEOC demanded a payoff for was a Hispanic female who was convicted of attempted murder for shooting at her husband in a college football game stadium where he was working as a cameraman. And so I was wondering if the EEOC thought that lady would be the perfect person for a corporation to handle to hire to handle customer complaints.
Boy, I tell you, she would. That'd be great. I could see her getting a good spot over there at RFK Stadium. That'd be. Is it still called RFK
RFK
Stadium?
Stadium. We are dating ourselves here, but that's okay.
What's it
I'm
called
trying to
now?
think what the name was before it was called RFK. What was the back in the 1950s?
I don't know. Were the Senators still playing there? Washington Senators?
Probably, yeah. I mean, the Senators, I guess, were there. They were there in the 1920s because that was w when Walter Johnson pitched for them, which every listener wants to know.
I'm sure that be hanging by every statistic we're able to throw out here. I'm sure somebody's got the bought the rights to name whatever the thing that is there. I can't keep up with them, whether it's the Mercedes-Benz Stadium or the old Yeller
Train
Stadium,
wreck station.
train wreck station.
That's the name that they should have used for the one that the Washington Redskins now Commanders got. You know, they just should have called it the train wreck because that's what their record's been ever since Dan Snyder bought the team.
Yeah, that's for sure. I thought that there I thought it was the Washington Nationals is the baseball team, right? And didn't they have a pretty good start?
Yes.
That they had a guy
Well, they
that
had a
threw the
pretty good start, and then they had a good start, then they sold off or dumped all their best players, and they've been saying, "Well, this is a rebuilding process." And I'm thinking, like, yeah, come back in the next century.
That's like
But
a
it's so
that.
heavily subsidized, and they're still having a lot of violence and killings near that stadium. So.
Well, a restructuring process, yeah, like Biden's Build Back Better. I guess that's more like a deconstruction process. I imagine the atmosphere around Camden Yards up in Baltimore isn't a whole lot better because it's right downtown. And I tell you, I got a couple of kids who live up there, and they used to like going to the Orioles games, but
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, but I guess you don't need to ever worry about having a dirty windshield.
no, that's true. That's true. You have to. Let alone bring along your old first aid kit, though, just in case, and get a gaping, sucking chest wound or something. I did want to congratulate you with all the business and the news about the riots up in the colleges, the Ivy Leagues, and all the rest of that. While I was looking at Chapter 7, 10,000 Czars and Last Rites, I noticed the previous chapter, Schools Gone Wild, and how appropriate for the time of day that we're living in. And right at the end, we talk about how the generation of kids that have been sacrificed for whatever fad sweeps political and education activists. And I said, well, man, that they're right. They're doing a pretty good job right now. Because earlier in the chapter, it looks as if, even though you hadn't written the book at that time, you talk about how the NCTE, I never heard of them before, the National Council of Teachers of English, had strongly suggested that this was back apparently in early 2000, I guess, 2022, somewhere around in there, said kids should stop reading books and poetry and sonnets. That little conversation we had about poetry a while back, get rid of all that business. Now they should require kids to read entire books instead of entire books. They should be edified on immigration, xenophobia, police brutality, racism, environmental degradation. The only thing you left out of there was Middle East politics. So I says, there's that. But you're prescient. Prescient right there. It's
Well, it's sad, but it's so tragic that the teacher association. There are a lot of good individual English teachers out there, and but the national associations on this, they have gone to the barricades against the printed word, and it's there has a declaration 2 years ago calling to decenter book reading and essay writing as the pinnacles of English. English education, speaking and listening are increasingly valued as forms of expression that are vital. I mean, so we are we going to go back to sitting around a campfire and telling stories or what?
I don't know if we'd even we may have zoomed past that because they if you're under what about 30, 35, I don't know if you can read handwriting anymore. They certainly can't read cursive. Their printing is pretty terrible. Grammar is non-existent. I got in a conversation with somebody, I think they were like 16 or something like that, and we were talking about school. I went to prep school, and he went to his school and so on. And I said, you know, who do you have for English, and what are you taking in English, and so on. And they had no idea what a preposition was. They don't do diagramming sentences. They don't know what a dangling participle is. They thought that probably was something in biology class. It was all that type of business, and that was not being covered anymore. And that, you, in fact, you'd get a note like your friend on X Twitter sent you if you were really interested in proper grammar and making sure that you didn't end sentences in propositions. Well, that never worked for me when I was dating. Ending sentences in prepositions, things along that order.
Ah, that was a very good line. It was given a little too quick.
Yeah,
but that's fine.
Well, my time has been off. I haven't done stand-up for a long time. But one final thing, though, I wanted to run by you. There was a couple of stories out there about FBI Director Wray. Apparently, he's made a couple of appearances now warning of pending doom, that they've got all their red lights flashing and all the rest of that, and that something bad is going to happen, maybe something like the nightclub massacre over in Russia. And he was just worried. Everyone's sitting on the edge of their chair, and I always get worried when they sit on the edge of their chair, because it's almost like they're telegraphing the next punch, kind of like they were worried about their budget, or at least the BATF was back in the Waco days. But do you get the sense that there's something real in the wind on this, or is just kind of a practiced bit of stochastic terrorism?
Well, there are some committees in Congress that are investigating the FBI.
Oh, well, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. I guess they're probably holding that over their head, because when they move into their new quarters, which I understand is bigger than the Pentagon, it'll be harder to track them down.
So has something happened on the budget request, the proposal for that new headquarters?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to find out, that information, because apparently it's all been cleared. That was all part of some of the things that Speaker Johnson was getting his knuckles wrapped for.
Ah,
was just giving.
Oh, him, my God. I've been watching him the last couple of weeks, and it's sad that the highlight of his time as House Speaker will probably be sitting and weeping while sitting next to Biden, when some Italian guy was screeching out a song at the National Prayer Breakfast. Mike Johnson seemed proud of weeping. He was telling journalists about how he wept, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's the same way a lot of people feel about the Bill of Rights.
True that. By the way, in case everybody missed it, there's an excellent piece at lewrockwell.com by a fellow named Unz, I believe, UNZ, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, about how Donald Trump, who everyone thinks is the new Messiah that will be elected in November, was hand in glove with Johnson in getting that whole benefit package for Ukraine and Middle East and all the rest of that passed. And he had his hands all over that. His fingerprints were all over it. C2 that it went through. And if you think that Donald Trump is going to be the guy that's going to stand up for your Constitution and your economy, you might want to take a look at that article. It's at lewrockwell.com.
It's amazing how there's been so little criticism of Trump on this from his supporters, but maybe it'll happen down the road. I don't know.
Everyone's so focused on the same speech that he gives before and after court every day. This is the first time there's ever, it's unprecedented. It's a witch hunt. I should be in Pennsylvania. Yeah, you should go to the Sheets place in Pennsylvania, Don. Maybe that'll be.
I mean, so here's something which is puzzling me. I mean, people are saying that Trump is going to be suffering because Biden is out there campaigning and Trump is not. And I would think that it's in Trump's interest to have all the attention on Biden when Biden is out there campaigning.
Yeah, you'd think. Well, that's a subject for another day. From the sounds of the sirens outside, it's got to be time for the regularly scheduled riot. That means the Bovard Memorial Curtain of Mercy will become crashing down and cause structural damage to our spiffy parquet floors. But take heart. There's just as good a chance next week's episode will be canceled by the government's Department of the Interior, or some government agency.
Or TSA.
Them, yeah. Should that happen, just grab your copy of Last Rites and devour another chapter. For questionable quality, there's always a subscription to Brian Wilson Writes at Substack.com for your daily minimum requirement of intellectual stimulation. For the implacable Jim Bovard, it's the indefatigable Brian Wilson reminding you, learning skills have increased so much in American education, Ivy League college graduates can now read their own Miranda rights.